Hello, this is Greg, and it's another edition of Listing Bits. With me today, I'm actually live at the CMLS conference in Austin, Texas, and I got a very special guest. I've got Aaron from HomeSpotter. How's it going, Aaron?
Good. How are you doing, Greg?
Another day in the life, man. Another day in the life. I've been wanting to talk with you for a long time, and I know we've been...
Well, I'm honored.
Yeah, this is like, just hasn't worked out before now, so I'm just glad we got together here.
Yeah, right on.
So we're actually in the lobby of CMLS. So everybody's on break right now, and unfortunately, we're missing one of the sessions there, but I think the CMLX celebration we could probably miss, and we're going to do this
right
now.
We're celebrating right here.
Yeah, we are, exactly.
In spirit.
Tell me a little bit about your background. Where are you located out of?
HomeSpotter is based in Minneapolis. I've lived basically my whole adult life there now. Actually grew up in rural Nebraska, family of entrepreneurs. So, you know, I think the entrepreneurial thing that's normal to you and I, weird to everybody else, has just been normal all my life.
What kind of businesses were your parents into?
By the time I left, they had started five businesses. First three, by their own admission, were pretty much failures. And the fourth was a manufacturing business that made mattress pads and pillows. And so just a kind of good old manufacturing company. They sold it off in the late 90s, probably good timing right before everything moved to China. Number five for them, oddly enough, was a hair salon.
Uh-huh.
Just one of those things, like my dad would get some random idea and go start a business, and here we are.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say hair salons. In my history, when a college friend of mine reached out to me and he had a girlfriend and another person he knew that wanted to start a software company, I wanted to know if I was want to join and do something. This is back in 91, 92.
Yeah.
And I said, sure. And at the time, I was, I don't know if I was or dating somebody who was a stylist or something. I thought a perfect thing would be to kind of sell something to hair salons because there's so many of them, right?
It's a lot.
When I went to this meeting with my buddies and we started talking about things, her mom, his girlfriend, who was, you know, the one who was wanted to start this company, was a realtor.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, real estate, I guess. I mean, there's, you know, I think there's a lot of hair salons, but, you know, real estate's cool. But I remember driving home from that meeting and I just started seeing Century 21 and Rema, all the offices. I'm like, oh yeah, shit, I could sell. All I have to do is go knock on those doors. I can do that. Right.
That's fantastic.
So it's like, you know, it's always almost the same. They're independent contractors. There's a lot of things there. But I mean, I'm assuming this was just basically a traditional hair salon, right?
Yeah. It was. And it was the weird thing about it. Like, it's not like my parents cut hair or styled or anything, but it was just, they saw a need in our small town in rural Nebraska.
That's wild. I love that. Yeah.
Opening a hair salon.
Yeah. That's great. So you're brought up in that environment of like them trying things and they go from mattresses to hair salons and things like that. So how'd you get into kind of tech? I mean, how'd you get into software?
Yeah. So way, way back. So my mom was an accountant and she would bring home, I don't know if you remember these old luggable compact devices, but literally a briefcase. And she would bring that home. I just got to messing around on that, learned BASIC back in the day, started writing small programs. And as I was going through school, kept iterating. Actually, in high school, I wrote some software that ended up selling as shareware, if you remember shareware
back
in the day.
Send me 25 cents or $25 in an envelope, right?
Yeah. And so as a high school kid, mid-90s, basically people are sending me $50 checks. I'm sending them a priority mail envelope of the unlocked version of the software. And in rural Nebraska, that was sure a hell of a lot better than working at Dairy Queen.
Oh, how about it? Yeah.
So that's what got me in. That's what got me hooked. And so ever since then, just got some idea to pursue. Probably, frankly, on a lot of them, it's just was more motivated by, can I build this? Then is this a good business? And one thing led to another.
Yeah. I have similar. I was on a Radio Shack color computer.
Yeah.
This is before, you know, actual IBM PCs, right? So those compacts were later. That was clones. And I was way before that. This is like when they had the Commodores and that kind of stuff. So.
Oh, yeah. We had a Commodore 64 too. Yeah. That was the best.
So writing programs for there, I was the same kind of way, right? And I actually ended up working at Radio Shack for all the way through college too.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, that was
nice.
I was a major geek. So, so I had that going on. But so you're like, you're doing all that. Where'd you go to school?
So went to a small liberal arts school in Minneapolis, St. Paul area, Bethel University. Uh-huh. And that's what brought me up to the Twin Cities and ended up sticking around after that.
Right. And I mean, was there some sort of like, did the light go off for HomeSpotter in some way? Where Were you looking for a house and like, this is ridiculous? Or I mean, what's the genesis of that?
Between 2001, 2009, after school, I had started a number of different businesses. One of them was a company I sold to Pearson Education. After I left, I stuck around after the sale for about 3 years.
What kind of business was that?
A company that was in K-12 education technology. Basically, what's referred to as a student information system tracks attendance and grades and enrollment. Really, it's the thing that drives funding for K-12 schools from their states. But basically, after I left that, I was just kind of wandering around, like doing consulting, doing random small software projects. And in the midst of that, I created this iPhone app called iGarageSale. It takes all the garage sales on Craigslist, geocodes them, and puts them on a map. That was kind of my first entree into location-based iPhone apps. And then pretty much right after that, got introduced to a real estate broker in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area that had really successful lead-generating website, wanted to have an iPhone app built. And I kind of went in and I pitched this idea that as a consultant, I would build an app for them. And back in the day, and even today, iPhone consultants were able to charge really high rates and kind of said, like, there's no way we're paying that. So I went back in and I said, well, how about we do this a lot cheaper for you, but I'll retain the intellectual property. We'll do this.
You have a license to sell it to anybody else you want.
Yep. And so it was a combination of that. And really, my wife and I were looking for our second house at that time. And back in 2009, this was before the national apps came onto the scene on the phones. I just thought it was stupid that you couldn't look for a house on your phone. So one thing led to another.
As far as like in a native environment, right?
Yeah.
So were you doing both iOS and Android or was?
Yeah. So the very first offering was iPhone. We pretty quickly added Android and somehow at that time still prioritized, oh, we need a BlackBerry version. And I will say, I look back to all the strategic or tactical mistakes. We spent way too much time on perfecting a BlackBerry app.
Yeah. There's a thing in the MLS industry where a lot of these new based MLS systems are all based upon Flex. I mean, it's not Flex MLS, but like Flash.
Yeah, right.
And the tablet coming, you know, iPad coming out just killed everything on
that. Right.
So you had, talk about tactical mistakes. I mean, there was companies that were spent fortunes on that platform that basically had to go nowhere.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You know, I own a software company, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had this kind of struggle with the mobile stuff, right? We've always gone the responsive route, which, you know, native developers always laugh at that because it's not as a rich experience of that. But what I was afraid of is that if I was going to go mobile first and my next application would be just working a native application, let's say iOS.
Yep.
I just look at the App Store and it's a mess and it's they're all 99 cents. And I just think, how can I build a business off, quote unquote, an app?
Yeah.
I mean, Apple's hijacked that word. But so I look at your business and I go, God, I mean, how's it licensed? How do people, you know, what happens there? Well, what's the revenue model? I mean,
I think it's a matter of, it is all about having the right business model. And I think in terms of trying to build an app business, you've got some of these apps that it's just totally consumer play and their whole idea is we're going to get as many people. And when we say as many people, like we're talking tens of millions of people and some strange way after the fact, after tens of millions of users, we're going to find a way to monetize. And, you know, you look in real estate, there's million plus agents out there. Even if you can capture a huge rate, say you get 99 cents from each of them, it's not going to turn into any kind of a meaningful, long-lasting, self-sustaining business. And so within that, we've still kind of relied on the traditional SaaS model that
software as a service.
Software as a service, yes. And, you know, the thing that we learned or that I kind of took away as we were getting into the business is we started out white labeling all of our broker apps. And so we really charge our brokers basically a monthly service fee for them to have a white labeled app. And early on, when we had one, two, half a dozen MLSs, our model was such that we really had to go to the big brokers and say, and really sell at that level. Because I always use the example, because I'm from Nebraska, if somebody called me from the middle of Nebraska and said, and they're an individual agent, says, I want an app or whatever, the economics just never made sense. And so we had to, with our initial go-to-market, basically have a high enough priced offering that would justify us going into that market, getting the data feeds, whatever, and really kind of starting out with that white-labeled broker offering was what was our entry point.
So for those who don't know it, what does HomeSpotter do? I mean, what's the elevator pitch on this?
So we've evolved a bunch since we got started in 2009, but basically the short tagline is that we want to make the process of buying and selling homes delightful. Now, you can break down a lot what that means, but basically we have three offerings right now. One is our broker white labeled app platform. Basically, brokers that maybe have a great website but want to have a mobile app complement to it, we call that our HomeSpotter signature offering. On the MLS front, we work with MLSs to provide basically a member benefit so that their members can be accessing the MLS on the go, sharing it with their clients, and really just being more productive. And we actually just announced about a month or two ago a new offering, Boost by HomeSpotter, that's basically a way for brokers and agents to automate their online digital marketing campaigns on Facebook and Instagram with trackable ROI. And so kind of maybe taking a page out of your book, we kind of got to this point where we'd done a lot in the mobile app space and kind of started to take a look back at what can we do with our real estate expertise now and potentially expand the number of products that we have. And so this is kind of our first venture into that.
Yeah. So, okay, I get that. And so a broker can buy, can they get white label it? So like, this is my app. This is our brokerage app, right?
Yep.
Then you have just HomeSpotter that you sell on a site license basis to MLSs.
Yep.
Can agents also buy direct if you're not in that market, or you're not going to go there and set anything up unless you have an anchor there with a broker and or a...
Yeah, right now it's just an anchor model on the mobile app. So we need to work with a big broker and MLS first.
What would you prefer? Would you rather have like a site license with an MLS or work with a broker?
You know, they're both different for us. I would say there's advantages to both. But I think in some of the MLS markets that we're in, we see 30, 40% of their members, sometimes even more, on a monthly basis use our software. And that's a pretty good anchor potentially to introduce other products into.
No, I keep hearing it. I mean, this falls a little bit in this kind of front end of choice things that people are talking about, where it's giving the agents that are the non-traditional MLS ways of searching MLS data instead of, you know, the Matrix and the and the Flex MLS and those things, right? So I think providing those kind of tools is MLSs, I know their membership are kind of crying out for that kind of stuff. What about listing input? Does it do a full listing input type of thing, or how does that work?
We have a growing number of MLSs that we work with where we do offer listing edit and update photo support. It's not yet a full listing ad tool. We might be going there eventually. And I think eventually the expectations start to get there on phones that, hey, maybe I actually could enter a whole listing on my phone. I think you bring that concept up 5 years ago, it's like, oh, that's a lot of input. But as people get more and more adept at using their phones, that's starting to become a reality. But short answer to your question is, in a lot of markets, we do have basic listing edit and update photo capability.
Yeah, so if they went back and they forgot to take a picture of the pool, they can just quickly and easily kind of do that. Or if they had a misspelling or something, they can kind of take care of those things.
Yeah.
That makes sense, yeah.
And really, it's about the quick status changes, or you get a call from your client. Yeah, let's drop the price. It's nice to be able to just take care of that on the go.
Right. Did you get some outside capital, or are you self-funded? I mean, what's that structure like?
Yeah. So in the early days, it was all a bootstrap thing. So the prior company that I sold and different things, I was able to, beyond just the time, invest a good amount of personal capital initially. That sustained us for the first 3 years or so. About 2012, early 2013, we did start to raise some capital, and we've had a few rounds of funding now.
Okay. Are this like a private equity thing, or these are Series A's, or you know, or whatever? I don't even know the parlance of that.
In my opinion, some of the labeling of rounds has become such an arbitrary thing at this point. You know, what's a seed round? What's an A round?
And right, right.
A lot of people have different definitions, but basically, we have had a couple of smaller funds invest, but for the most part, it's been angel investors that are in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area.
So so angel kind of investors. I get that. Okay. So not like, you know, crazy institutional.
No. Yeah. The great thing about that for us, Greg, is that it offers a lot of optionality at this point in terms of where we go next. There's not an immediate gun to our head, so to speak, of, well, you got to sell this for 10x in the next 5 years. Yeah, we're still motivated to have a good outcome and make some money along the way, but we aren't on a predefined path that VC is setting for us at this point.
Right. No. Yeah. So, okay. Walk me through. I get the white label broker version. I get the site licensable, you know, HomeSpotter version. Yep. I mean, it's a mobile MLS basically, right?
Yep.
Not a lot of people in that. I mean, I guess there was Goomzy, but he's kind of, Mike's a little bit out of it a bit.
Yep.
There's MLS Touch, right? So I see those guys a little bit around. But that third thing that you talked about, like, it's like a ad kind of play in a sense. Does that have anything to do with HomeSpotter, the app, or is that just a separate thing?
We're keeping it a fairly independent product at this point. The long-term vision with it, which I'll just share with anybody who's listening here, is you can kind of see this picture of an agent managing their sales funnel, so to speak. And the lower end of the funnel, you've got the HomeSpotter app where you've got sort of the back and forth conversation with your buyers happening, that very conversational aspect. And we see Boost as a way for agents to really kind of fill the top end of their funnel, so to speak. And so over time, we see them playing very well together as a joint offering. But right now, they are very independent things where one doesn't require the other.
So they're boosting posts. What does the product do,
We set this up as a automated system, and it combines a few different aspects where we sell this, by the way, to agents, teams, and even big brokers, and we've got clients at all those tiers. But the first part of it is automation. And so as a new listing or an open house comes onto the market, we're going to automatically create a Facebook and Instagram ad. And with that, we combine the ad creative, and that includes the listing photo, the copy, all of that. With the automation, we email the agent or the broker at the time it's about to go live. The goal is they don't have to do anything. They just let it do its thing. But if they want to make an edit, they can hop in and edit, or they can cancel it all together. We combine automated ad targeting with that. So it's going to go to a targeted audience of prospective buyers. Also, we're trying to target the seller there so that they know that their agent is working for them. And we send the traffic to a property lead page that's kind of designed for capturing leads in the Facebook context. And then we've got a lot of what we think of as very useful reporting around all of that. So it's kind of a packaged automated digital marketing system.
Right. And did you, and this is if they have a listing, right?
Yeah.
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 So when did you launch this?
So we started incubating the idea last October, and we've had a number of clients we've worked with on pilots since then. We really kind of formally took the covers off of it with the market, meaning we actually acknowledged it on our website in June. Really at Inman in August is when we started to make a bigger deal about it.
Yeah, so I get that. I mean, so some of that though, so are you managing the agent's ad budget, or is it?
Right. It's a total managed package.
So what you're doing from that standpoint is like you have some sort of probably management fee for this or subscription to this product. And that's, is it kind of where you're buying a lot of traffic and then selling it back to the agents in a way?
Yeah, we basically
an arbitrage kind of thing.
In a sense, I mean, the agent or the broker pays us a single fee. Hey, promote our listing or our open house for us. On the back end, we're taking care of all the ad costs and everything, but delivering it as a full system.
Right. The big process here, the big kind of differentiator, I think, here is this automation. Mm-hmm. It comes on that you're aggregating that feed, so boom, it goes, right?
Yep. So it's the automation, and it's also, I mean, I think for the, whether you're an agent who's tried this and knows exactly what needs to be done to make it effective, for them, it really is about the automation, because they could do that, but this is going to save them a lot of time. For the average agent, though, that maybe isn't all that familiar with Facebook marketing, this is really a way that they can be effective with their marketing. As we would say, anybody can create an ad. Not everybody can necessarily actually have an effective ROI on that. By really controlling the whole experience of, you're going to go to this page, we're going to have a very effective way to capture buyer leads from it. For the average agent, it's going to be a lot more effective than just boosting a post, so to speak, on Facebook.
Yeah. We've looked at different, scenarios and stuff. And like about 2 years ago, we came to this kind of realization. I mean, I think one of our director of biz development, Damon Alton, was talking about where he was doing a lot of changing his presentations up. And what he was trying to show people is how to use, in our case, like Cloud CMA, not as like a reactive product, meaning, oh, I have listing presentation. Oh, I'm taking a buyer out on tour. Oh, I have a buyer that's interested in this property. I'm going to create a report for them. But how can we flip that and make it, instead of a reactive product, but more of a proactive product, where they're using it to get business, right?
Right.
You're talking about a product that's only for working agents.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. So I've always looked at it where if I'm going to walk in a room and there's 100 agents in there, I want to have a product that I can sell to 100 agents.
Yeah.
I don't want to have a product that I can only sell to 5.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So this kind of epiphany for us was, if we can make Cloud CMA more of a proactive product, they can use it to generate leads, then they would get more value out of their ROI would be out there, right? So, and that's the idea behind some of these things we've added to it, like these landing pages or Cloud Attract, where, but what I have stopped at and where we make a clear line is, we just make tools for agents, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to be in the advertising business, right?
Yeah.
I'm much older than you, right? So my first software company, we released a real estate software company. We released software on 5 1/4 diskettes, right?
Yeah.
So the web for me is still, it's obviously everything's on the web now, but I still have those kind of level of thinking, which is probably not good. We make tools for agents. That's all we do. We're not like these services things is not something that we're not really good at or don't have an interest to kind of do in.
Yeah.
And then the other part of that is it's top line revenue a lot of times, right? Where you're going to have this cost of buying the ads or buying the traffic or whatever you want to call it to kind of do that. So, but more and more I hear like you guys, I think HomeSnap's kind of model is going towards selling these advertising services, but the net profit might not be there, but definitely the gross revenue is there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the thing that I was really looking at as we were exploring what we were going to do next, I think there are a lot of agents, like we have, I'll just say this here, we've got like 50,000 agents that use our platform on a weekly basis. So we've got a lot of agents out there that find a lot of value in this. We're getting paid for those agents primarily from MLSs and from brokers. But I would bet if we were to go to an average agent, and not to undersell ourselves here, but if we were to go to an average agent and say, you're quite a bit more productive because of HomeSpotter, right? Yeah. I mean, we've got the weekly active users to support that. But if we were to then say, you know what, your broker, your MLS isn't going to pay for this anymore. How about you pay us $30 a month? I think, unfortunately, the average agent thinks like the average consumer in terms of, not wanting to spend on productivity tools. But you start to look at, well, I can just pay on an as-needed basis to advertise my property, and that might help me win more sellers because I know I'm going to be marketing their property online. It's a different calculus that's made.
Right. Well, I mean, it's I think why you see the Zillows and everything else. I mean, they understand that agents are going to spend more money on advertising than they are on tools.
Yeah.
Right. So we realize that big time. I think I'm not sure as far as our revenue, there's got to be a cap where being a tools business in the MLS industry or in the real estate industry, we might cap out at a certain revenue model and that's it, right?
Yeah.
No, I think about that too. I don't know. I'm not, the services stuff, especially the ad stuff is like, I guess we can hire for that.
Yeah.
You say this and like you're doing something like I've been thinking about. And I know other vendors who probably listen to this podcast think about, I guess I got to hire somebody that knows all that stuff. I'm just not,
Time will tell. It's definitely a bet we're making right now.
Yeah. To me also, there's a matter of how many agents can a FTE support in that kind of model to kind of manage their accounts. I know there's a lot of automation in this, in these kind of like ad spends, and that, you know, Facebook makes it very easy for you to spend money with them. Google the same way, right? But still, there's got to be somebody that's watching all that stuff. And can one person, can one FTE handle 40 agents? Can they handle 100? Can they handle 3? I wonder what the scalability of that is as well.
Yeah, well, we'll find out over time. I mean, all I can really share at this point is we're auto boosting thousands of listings per month right now. Anybody can go to our team page and see that we're not that big of a team at this point.
Right.
But I'm sure there's a lot to still be figured out in terms of how much can scale.
Right. What do you think the best way that you can upsell your current subscribers, right? Do you do that via something in-app? Is that something email? Are you going out to offices? Are you holding meetings? I mean, are you calling them on the phone? I mean, what's your what's your best, if you want to upsell them this Boost product, I mean, what's your go-to?
As I mentioned, we just kind of officially announced Boost over the last couple of months. And so there are a lot of levers we intentionally haven't pulled with that yet. We tend to think making Boosting listings available in the app as a purchase is going to be a good path for us, but it's not even one we've lit up or turned on yet. And so, you know, our model right now is we're primarily partnering with brokers, franchisers, even MLSs on how do we get this in front of their agents in a way where we maybe actually email the listing agent at the time that they've got a new listing and use the automation as a part of that, so that in some cases, maybe a broker is paying for the initial week and then they leave it up to the agents to pay for more. And so we have kind of the follow-up of, hey, see how your ad did for the first week. Do you want more?
Right.
And we think that's going to be the most effective path right now, but we've still got a lot to figure out and explore there.
So you're a Mac or PC guy?
Oh, definitely Mac guy.
Yeah. What browser do you use?
I'm still on Chrome. I keep feeling like I might switch up here at some point, but using Chrome.
Right. Are you the idea guy too, or you got some people that you work with that are always contributing, or how does that work in the office?
Yeah, we've got a pretty diverse team, but still a team that's very heavily product and engineering focused. And so we've got a number of people on the team that bring forward, you know, whether it's more technology perspective or product ideas. A lot of that floats up internally. We've got some cool ways where we actually reach out to our customers and they can kind of upvote different ideas over time. I'm really a product guy at heart.
So are you coding, or?
You know, I had this hard line that I drew in the sand. I think it was probably back in 2014 where I said, on this date, I'm not going to code anymore. And I stuck to that for a long time. I'm coding again. I spend like not in a demonstrable, meaningful, huge sum of my time, but it's, you know, it's maybe 5-10% of my time. It's just something I enjoy doing. And the more typical way that I'll kind of bring my coding skills to the table are less on necessarily product development and more like, can we do something here to figure out how to go further, faster with marketing or sales?
Right. Yeah. And I guess that's for us too, is just trying to, how do we reach those things? We're having pretty good success with our in-app stuff.
Yeah.
We just did a deal with Tom Ferry, right? So
that's great.
He's got these things where strategies at listing presentations, like overcoming objections, and here's how what his listing presentation looks like. So working with him and his team, we put together these kind of content pages and covers, you know, based upon, you know, your typical kind of cover to a report would be, you know, a house in the hills, or, you know, just more property centric, right? Where we wanted like lifestyle centric, like why people move. You know, there's that Zillow had that great consumer report that really was like, you know, fascinating to me. It was like this $1 billion company did a research thing on the thing I do. So I just could read it, but they're one off kind of thing. So buy the cloud CMA listing presentation kit by Tom Ferry, and it's $149 one time fee, and you'll get all these covers and you'll get all this content, and just click here.
Yeah.
And that's been going great. We've had another thing called a power pack.
Yeah.
But something to add to our products.
Yep.
They're not recurring. It's more of a one-time thing, but it is when we find our active users, they like the brand, they like the product. So we're just trying to come up with more ideas to kind of what else can we put in there. Now, the dream would like to be kind of up with something that's more of a recurring revenue,
you know,
another monthly.
Yeah.
And that's where like Cloud Streams and Cloud MLX and now Cloud Track come in.
Yeah.
Sometimes at the end of the day, you get a little product fatigue also. So,
That's the interesting thing for me on the new offering is like, I know SaaS models pretty well at this point. Recurring revenue is great. Investors love recurring revenue. As a majority business owner, I love recurring revenue. It's very predictable. And on Boost, it's more, you're going to pay per listing or per open house. And it cuts both ways. It creates a very low entry point that anybody feels like they can try it out. They aren't committed for a long haul or whatever. But you have to deliver so much more value in that time that they come back for the next one.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about, this is like inside baseball shit, I know, but like I said, every time I talk to somebody who's doing kind of similar to me, I always want to, some of these freemium models still, I mean, one of the things I liked about you guys is you didn't really kind of fall for that trap a little bit, right? Where like the MLSs will say, well, just, you know, provide a free version and you can upsell them, right?
Yeah.
To me, that's the total available market isn't there for those percentages to work.
Yeah.
So did you ever at a time do that? I know some people have.
We did introduce a free version of HomeSpotter for MLSs probably two to three years ago. And we've got a number of MLSs that have adopted that as well. We've been kind of slow to come back, frankly, with like, here's our direct path of how we're going to have some premium version that agents buy. So I'm quick to say that we haven't yet demonstrated that you can convert on that. We thought it was an important thing at the time, would probably make the same decision again. But really, I got to say, like every MLS that chooses our premium version, they see substantially higher adoption rates. It's a better product. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for if you're going to go down that path, you better damn sure make sure you've got a way that you can monetize on the other.
Yeah. So when you're coding, like, what's your typical thing? When are you most productive?
That's a good question. I mean, just in general, I'd say it's probably true for coding, but for most things that I try to be productive on, I'm productive early in the morning and late at night. There's always a lag in the afternoon. So I try to schedule meetings in the afternoon.
Nowadays, it's more in the morning because when I get home, I'm just tired.
Yeah.
I used to stay up all night. If I've got an idea or something, project, I usually can kind of do that. It's just, it's getting harder all the time.
Oh, the age is catching up to me too. Yeah. I don't know. I was telling somebody else today, if I have too many nights in a row where it's only 6 hours of sleep, I'm feeling it.
Yeah. How many people in the company?
We've got 15.
15. Are all of them in the office or partly remote? Or
we've got a guy that works for us remotely, but otherwise everyone's in the office.
Excellent. Well, I mean, I see you guys around all the time. I hear great things about the product. So congratulations on your success, and hopefully, you know, you'll be finding some other new products, and this Boost thing takes off for you. But I appreciate you taking the time here on Listing Bits.
Thanks for having me on, Greg. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Okay, man. Thanks.